Okay, sounds good. I think it's 10:03. We'll call the meeting to order. This is Mary Talpola. I'm acting as chair today. We will start with a roll call to establish quorum. Savannah, would you mind taking that over?
Absolutely. Downriver Elder James Charles. Downriver Elder John Andrew.
Here.
Upriver Elder Alan Simeon.
I'm here.
Lower River Subsistence, Mike Williams Sr. Middle River Subsistence, Walter Morgan. Did I miss here? Was that you, Walter?
Yes.
Upriver Subsistence.
Madam Chair, this is Dan.
All right, I did hear Walter faintly say he is here.
Yes.
Okay.
Of Upriver Subsistence, Barbara Carlson. Upriver Subsistence, Fred Bobby. Upriver Subsistence, Ruby Egress. Headwaters, Daniel Esai. First member at large, Fritz Charles.
Here.
First member at large, Albert Quagley.
Here.
Second member at large, Mary Peltola.
Here.
Western Interior Rec, Kevin Whitworth.
Here.
Western Interior Rec, Rebecca Wilmars. YK Delta Rec, Alyssa Rogers. Commercial Fishing, Charlie Brown. Sport Fishing, Lamont Albertson.
Here.
Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, Avery Hoffman.
Here.
And Intertribal Fish Commission, James Nicorai. And Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Nick Smith.
Here.
And Department of Fish and Game, Ross Rennick.
Here.
We have 11 full voting members and one alternate, so we do have quorum.
Okay. Thank you, Savannah, and thank you, everyone, for calling in this morning and having such great attendance. Next on the agenda is introductions. Can we start with Alaska Department of Fish and Game, please?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's doing well this summer. This is Chuck Brazil with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'm the Regional Management Coordinator for the Division of Commercial Fisheries for the AYK region.
Good morning, everybody. This is Sean Larson with Fish and Game.
This is Iris Fletcher out at the sonar.
Good morning. This is John Linderman with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Is John Chiclick on the phone from Fort Fish or anybody from Division of Subsistence at Alaska Department of Fish and Game? All right, hearing no one else, Fish and Wildlife Service?
This boy.
Good morning, it's Frank here, Delta Fish National Wildlife Service, United Fisheries Office.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is Boyd, Refuge Manager at Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge.
I'm at Nick Ray, Yukon Delta.
Yukon Delta.
Hi, this is Brooke McDavid. I'm the coordinator for the YK Delta RAC.
And good morning. This is Nisa Pilcher, Council Coordinator for the Western Interior RAC.
All right. Now that we've gone through Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife Service, is there anyone else who would like to introduce themselves from the river or the press or retired folks?
Good afternoon or morning.
Go ahead.
This is Anna Rose MacArthur from KYUK.
Good morning, Mary. This is Jim Simon with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to hear everybody. I'm smiling big. Let's keep introducing ourselves. Anybody who wants to announce their presence?
This is Dan Gilligan with the Native Village in the Pymes.
Dylan for ONC.
Taj Tony with ONC.
Jaden Andrew, Yukon Delta.
Hi, this is Teresa Moji with the Intertribal Fish Commission.
This is Kaylee King with KYUK.
Okay, if we don't have anyone else who'd like to introduce themselves, good morning, all of you online. Next on the agenda, we have the invocation. Lamont Albertson, would you please consider the invocation this one?
I will. Thank you, Mary. Let us pray. Our Father, we're thankful for this day, and we're thankful that we're so well represented here today. We are thankful for the rain that fell yesterday for our bear pickers. We pray that you will be with our bear pickers, that they will be safe as they go across the tundra and spread out across the state. We're thankful for the Department of Fish and Game and their personnel who are here with us, and we pray that you'll give them safety, as we are thankful for the Fish and Wildlife Service and for what they do for us. We pray that you will bless us as we go forward, that we might make the right decisions for the people we represent, as well as for the resources which you have given us, which we are so thankful for. We all ask this prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Lamont. Approval of minutes. Savannah sent out the motion items to all of our emails earlier this week, or last week, I should say. Next, we've got approval of the agenda. Are there any additions or deletions people would like to offer now?
I approve. Let's move that we approve the agenda.
Okay, Lamar makes the motion. Is there? Okay, and Fritz seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say aye.
Say aye.
Okay, unanimous consent to approve this agenda. Next, we've got an update from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. Boyd, would you please proceed with an update?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I will. And neither Therese or Kevin, Lamont, but others that are Intertribal Fish Commission representatives can jump in anytime. But last weekend we had fishing opportunities, a drift net opportunity on the Saturday, and then Sunday was a set net opportunity. And we did flights with the Fish and Wildlife Service aircraft, and we counted roughly between 70 and 80 boats or nets on the drift net day. And we didn't do flights for the set net opportunity, but we had law enforcement out, and we kind of got a rough estimate that there are about 50 set nets out there on that opportunity. So that is clearly an indication that the interest in fishing has gone down, and there's less pressure to fish over that last opportunity. And for that reason, and for some others, our concern over gill nets in the water for chum has decreased a little bit at Fish and Wildlife Service. There is still a concern over chum for sure in the waters, and we have an opportunity this weekend on Saturday, a set net opportunity that was part of Emergency Special Action Number 5, and we haven't made any other announcements. We are waiting to see what occurs with this opportunity this weekend, and we're looking at the data from ADF&G very closely because we want to we need to make sure that the chum passage is past Bethel and at some level that makes us comfortable before we relinquish things that are federal protections on the Kuskokwim. But that is our next matter of discussion, is that we're going to look at the chum passage. Last year we used roughly 90% passage of chum before we were comfortable in not having any conservation measures in place from the federal side. So being consistent roughly with that estimate, we will be discussing on Tuesday with the Intertribal Fish Commission any other concerns we have, and essentially looking at a date to relinquish all the emergency special actions that we have in place right now, which there are 5 of them. So at any rate, that's our plan. Tuesday, I was talking to Kevin earlier, and the tentative plan is to meet on Tuesday next week and look at run timing from Bethel Test Fish and sonar historical numbers and look at what the numbers show this year, and then hopefully make an announcement about, for lack of a better word, backing out of the conservation measures we have in place. Therese or Kevin, I don't know if from the Intertribal Fish Commission side if there's anything to add. All right. And all the information on the next opportunity, like I said, this Saturday, is Intertribal Fish Commission has done a great job of posting that information, and we really appreciate that. Therese has been doing a great job with having graphics, so if anybody out there wants more information on this Saturday's opportunity, on the Intertribal Fish Commission page and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we a lot of times share their information and back and forth. So, I think that's all I have.
Okay. And Boyd, just for clarification, what are those times on Saturday, please?
6 to 10 on Saturday, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay, and the plan you said is to regroup with the Intertribal Fish Commission on the 19th to talk about relinquishing federal management, is that correct?
I guess the only thing, the only decision left now is not, there's a chance that something odd happens maybe with the data coming in from sonar or vessel test fish, but I think, probably not, probably the next decision or next discussion will be looking at run timing and backing out of the emergency special actions that are in place. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you, Boyd. Kevin Whitworth?
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Kevin. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, 4x4.
Okay, thanks. Yep, I don't have much to add to what Boyd was saying here. Besides, the CBHM program, the Community-Based Harvest Monitor Project that we run at the Fish Commission, we wrapped up that program. On the July 9th opener, we produced a harvest estimate, and that was our last harvest estimate that we'll produce for the year. These set net opportunities that Boyd had mentioned, we're not going to have a harvest estimate from those. So things are starting to wrap up as far as that project goes. I really don't have anything else to add other than that. Thank you very much, Mary.
Thank you, Kevin. So moving on, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Management is under consideration. Nick Smith.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This is Nick Smith with the Department of Fish and Game. So quick recap of where we're at in Sections 4 and 5, so Aniak up to the headwaters, gill nets, both set and drift, and the retention of kings and selective gears is open. Gill nets are restricted to 6-inch or smaller mesh, 25 fathoms in length. Live release of chum salmon is required in fish wheels and beach stains, and the Aniak box is still closed. The gill nets and the retention of kings and selective gears. At this time, I don't have any additional subsistence restrictions to take, so I guess my management recommendation is continue the status quo. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Nick. Next, there are people to be heard, and under people to be heard, I think we can open it up for questions of Nick if there are any. Otherwise, the floor is now open under people to be heard, and this is really for non-working group members. If we're not ready for people to be heard, do any working group members have any questions of Nick Smith or Boyd Blahovdy or Kevin Whitworth?
Madam Chair.
Yes, this is Dan at Headwaters.
Go ahead, Dan. Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Yes, I just came back to work, and I heard that there was hardly any fish that passed through the weir at Salmon River at Pitka Fork. Is that true?
True. They'll be done.
Nick Smith or someone from Fish and Game?
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Sean.
Go ahead, Sean.
So I'm just pulling up Pitka numbers right now, and it is true, Pitka Fork has been passing some king salmon. Through the 11th, they've passed 46 king salmon. So for this time of year, it's actually pretty low, but they are starting to get some fish there. Thank you.
46, okay.
Is this a late run?
I can actually, Madam
okay.
Chair?
Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
Just to be perfectly clear, I can update that through the 12th. Through the 12th, it was 67 king salmon. So, thanks.
What is it usually at this time?
So, this chair, the average for all years for this date would be about 1,450. Just average for the last 5 years at Pisco Fork, they would have seen 850 king salmon through the 12.
850, you say?
Yes. Yeah, and anyone following along with the packet, you know, this is on page 21 of the working group packet if you want to just take a peek sometime. We'll talk about assessment later in the meeting, but that's where this
okay.
Work is.
Okay. Right. Dan Esai, do you have any follow-up?
It probably has to do with the size of the fish, too. It probably swims right through the weir if it's not wide enough.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions of the management? This time, I know in a bit we're going to go over the data that Fish and Game compiles. All right. Is there anyone from the public who would like to be heard? Do we have any members of the public who wish to be heard under people to be heard? Okay. Not hearing any. We'll keep going. On to continuing business. Subsistence report. Lois River, I believe, would be Mike Williams Sr. Oh, no, Bischoff and Redumpkin. It would be Charlie Brown and Chris Charles. So, Charlie Brown, do you have a subsistence report? Or Chris Charles?
Yeah, I don't have any subsistence reports. We're done fishing until the silvers hit. And I didn't go anywhere since the previous, I don't know, back in June, I guess. That's when we last fished. Thank you.
Okay, thanks,
Fred.
Charlie Brown?
I don't have nothing to report. Thank you.
Yes. Mike Williams Sr.
Thanks, Mary. It has been a very good drying summer, and we're pretty much done. Just got back from bear picking, and we have for the last period. I think everyone is winding down. going to wait for some more canning or canning. So, thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you. And John Andrew?
John, thank you, ma'am. John Andrew from Cleesook. Over here, people that have boats and nets that go out early in June, the most of them are set there, done with fishing. Only the people that cannot go out are still wanting to fish to jar or freeze. Majority of them are done. That last opening on the 9th, I just did one drift in the morning, a short drift, and I ended up with 7 reds, 5 chums, and one king. And then I went back to the camp and cleaned them out, and since nobody was at my camp, I had to cut them myself and hung them into the rats. But the majority of them are done over here because some of them are very picking and they're waiting for silvers. Thank you, ma'am.
Good. Thank you, John. Avery Hoffman?
Yeah, my parents fished this weekend and they were happy to be fishing and there wasn't too many people out there fishing. They were fishing and He was fishing a 6-inch and a 4-inch, and he said it was good. And then he did the Sunday set net opener and caught 6 reds, and he really didn't see much effort during Sunday. And not too many people called me on this past weekend. Everyone just called me saying that they were berry picking and how they did. Have more of an update on berry picking
then.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Is there anyone else who would like to give a subsistence harvest report? I know Mark Carlson is not on the phone. Walter Morgan, do you have a subsistence update?
Yeah, good morning, Mary. Everybody's pretty much done here, berry picking, and there's only a few families that are going out right now. I went out 2 days ago, and I got real short nest, probably 30-footer, and I had a short drift. I caught a huge king, and it was really nice looking. I had one king and 2 dogs, and, It's really good this year. Everybody's done fishing and, you know, pretty much, and some are going to jar. So it's really slow here. Hardly anybody's out there. That's my report. Thanks.
Thank you, Walter. Alyssa Rogers, are you online? Okay, not hearing Alyssa. Kevin, do you want to give a subsistence report?
Yeah, this is Kevin. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yeah, most people are done fishing right now. I think most people are waiting for cohos to show up. Usually in July, this is kind of a chum salmon month. So, but I know of very little people fishing right now. During the king salmon fishing, it was slow. There was some people catching, but towards the end of the run, there was some people having a hard time getting their salmon to dry. They said they just started to jar instead. That was just too warm out. But towards the first end of the run, first part of the run, the people were able to dry some fish. But there was some people catching whitefish and sheepfish, pike, and stuff like that, and a lot of people put that away. But very little fishing this year up here. That's all. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Is there anyone else who'd like to do a subsistence harvest update?
I am here. This is Albert Quaggy.
Hi, Albert. Go ahead.
Yeah, my granddaughter's boyfriend, they got 35 reds, and they just hang up for half-dried fish. They're going to put them away, and they're getting ready for berry picking, and they like to tank going through for the net around the drying rack to keep the flies up. There are a lot of flies now that's warmed up, the sun's come up, and we went up quick, and Tebung, no berries, just dry. No berries, just a few. And my family up back took they're done with fishing. Maybe they'll can fish. But that's about all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert. Is there anyone else? I think that's all of the members on the phone. Next on the agenda, we have in-season harvest report from ONC and the Fish Commission. Avery?
Madam Chair?
Oh, go ahead, Dan. Sorry about that.
Subsistence report.
Yes, please. Sorry about that.
I guess a lot of people are not getting their needs at the headwaters, all the families that I spoke to before I went back to work on Monday. I guess we're not even going to have no dry fish this year. We're just going to have frozen salmon. I guess berries are pretty much dry. There's a drought on the interior, as you guys are aware. So the salmon berries are kind of small, but they're around. We just gotta go buckle up and go try to get red salmon, I guess, and whitefish. Tilapia were pretty big this year. Maybe they might come back. I don't know. I'm pretty disheartened because I've shared salmon in the past, and my mother did, and now we're not going to have no salmon strips or jarred fish, so we're used to hardship for many years, so it's nothing new to us. Me and her were discussing that the other day before I went to work. She said, we'll get by somehow. We always do. That's my report.
All right. Thank you. Alan Simeon, do you have a subsistence report?
Good morning. I did literally one day of fishing and must have got the reds when they were running very heavy and I got swamped. So I gave most of the way in. I fished both sides of the river, south side and the north side. North side I got tremendous amount of reds. And I moved my net to the south side and got more kings and less reds. But big, beautiful reds and nice, bigger kings. And kind of silly, all my reds on the south side were all bigger than the king's jacks on the north side. It was really good. I'm done with salmon. Waiting for Silver Salmon Derby start up next month. Thank you.
Very good, Alan. So when you say a tremendous amount, what's the ballpark number for that?
Well, I want to tell you. I set my net on the north side. This is on a big eddy below my uncle Carl's called Birch Tree Crossing, and I set my net 10 hours, a little over 10 hours. I got 26 kings and 172 reds.
Wow, that is a tremendous amount.
Yes.
So, and I'm sure you shared that with your whole community.
And people were so happy for red. People here, some are allergic to king salmon, so they were very, very happy for the reds.
Very good. Very good. Well, I think you get the provider award. For sure.
I did the same thing, and I got 117. And I'm a crazy at the big lady. My cousin Walter knows where I set my net, and sometimes it just gets swamped.
Well, and you're even telling people where your fishing spot is. This is something, Alan. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Next
And I think we did cover everyone. Next, we've got the season harvest report, and I'd like to ask Avery Hoffman to provide that report, if that's appropriate, Avery.
Yeah. During the July 9th, this is on page 3 of your packet, by the way. During the July 9th opener, our ONC fisheries crew visited 7 fish camps, and 3 of those fish camps were actively fishing. And we also gathered 66 fishing trips from the Boat Harbor surveys. Going down to the comments on the July 9th. Had reports of different salmon and fish species caught. 2 reported catching a Dolly Varden. 2 camps reported pink salmon caught. And lastly, there was a few reports of some silver salmon. One fisher hoped that the chum salmon would go by during the closure of July. And 4 people were glad for the opener, and a lot of people were catching, and that it was on a Saturday. There are a few people saying that we are doing a good job in managing the river, but there are still folks explaining that they want the river open sooner. One was thankful for the dip net rental from ONC. And lastly, there was some great concern around federal management to stop telling a fisherman what to do with subsistence fishing and to, quote, leave us alone, end quote. Going down to table 1, this is from the July 9th drift net opener. 66 individual and, oh my gosh, 66 surveys. Out of those 66 surveys, there was an average of 1.2 chum salmon, average 1.2 Chinook salmon, average of 6.5 chum, and 18.6 sockeye. Less than 1 of other harvests, and those net range was 50 to 300 feet, and 46 inches in that mesh. The 3 surveys from fish camps, the average of Chinook was 10.3, average of chum was 4.3, and 22 was average for reds. And there was no other harvest, and that net range was 150 feet, 5 to 6 inches. And then there was 1 survey conducted of someone fishing in the Gleek. And lastly, from July 5th to July 11th, ONC Fisheries crew delivered 31 Chinook salmon to the Bethel area elders without any sables, and those were caught by 8 last Department of Fish and Game Bethel fishery. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Avery. Are there any questions for Avery? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to overview of the Cusco River Salmon Run Assessment, and I believe Sean Larson is on deck for this.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. So we're going to start on page 6 of your working group packet. It should say Chinook Salmon BCF Summary on the top. And this is data through the 11th of July. So on the 11th, there was a daily CPUE of 5. And that brought us up to a cumulative of 471. And that cumulative is ahead of 2020, but it's slightly behind last year. And just for reference, both the 2020 and 2021 total run sizes were similar. It was around 125 to 130,000 fish. Roughly somewhere between 91% and 96% of the run is probably through Bethel. So no matter how you look at it, we're at the tail end of the King Run. Excuse me. So if you go down to this figure on the left, this is the end of season BTF prediction for Kings. And we'll look at one of these for chum and sockeye as well. And all these figures are set up the same way for each species. So this is showing the predicted end of season CPUE based on the central 80% of run timing scenarios. And that's that light gray band, the wider band.
also the central 50% of run timing scenarios, which is the dark gray band, and also the predicted end of season based on historical median run timing, which are those dark circles. And on all these prediction plots we look at, last year's end of season CPUE, those are going to be the dashed horizontal line that you see on each figure. So for this figure, you can see that we're predicting an end-of-season cumulative for Kings just under last year's, which makes sense since we're at the tail end of the run and we're currently slightly behind last year. So no surprises there. If you take a look to the right, the next figure is showing our cumulative CPUs for Kings for this year, which is the dark circles, compared to other years. And you can see that... for the most part this season, the King run's been coming in similar to last year. Just the last couple year or couple days, we fell slightly behind last year. Not much, but just a little bit. And there will be Kings trickling in over the next week or so, but we are pretty close to the end of the run for Kings. Okay, let's move on to Chum Salmon. That's going to be page 7. On the 11th, we had a daily CPUE of 95. That's the largest CPUE we've seen this year. And that brought us up to a cumulative of 881. So that's well ahead of last year, and it's also slightly ahead of 2020. So in 2020, the cumulative for the 11th was 818, as opposed to this year being 881. And if this was a year with average run timing, roughly 71% of the run would be through. Now, looking down at the end-of-season cumulative prediction figure here, this is showing the end-of-season prediction for Chum at the Bethel Test Fish. It's set up the same way as Kings that we just looked at. And you can see the end-of-season prediction based on median run timing. It's right now it's pointing us to a prediction that's similar to the 2020 estimate. The end of season prediction for or the end of season cumulative for 2020. But it's also showing that we're well above last year. Last year's that dashed line that's on the very bottom part of the figure. So the takeaway here is, you know, at least at this point in the run, things can change, especially since we have, you know, quite a few more chum to see. But we're much better off than last year, and right now things are pointing to an end of season cumulative similar to 2020. And if you look at the figure on the right, you can see that this year's run is coming in very slow but steady. It's the same story we talked about this time last week. If 2020 were plotted on this graph, the 2022 line would be directly on top of it. So we're really following that year pretty closely. Okay, let's look at sockeye. That's going to be page 8. On the 11th of July, we had a daily CPUE of 39, and that brought us up to a cumulative of 1,222. That's ahead of 2020 and slightly behind where we were at last year at this point. And we would expect to have roughly 85 to 98% of the run through Bethel at this point, depending on if it was a little bit earlier or a little bit late. I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer to that 85%. Since sockeye have been coming in pretty late over the last 8 years or so. And then looking down at the end-of-season predictive graph, the predicted end-of-season plot is suggesting that if this is the year with normal run timing, the cumulative CPUE would be less than last year, which is that horizontal dashed line. But if the run indeed has later run timing, which I kind of expect, we'll start seeing this dotted line start creeping upward into the higher CPUs. So we'll just be keeping an eye on that through this week. And taking a look at the cumulative CPUE graph on the right, the only major thing to note here with sockeye is that the big daily CPUEs we were seeing for sockeye seem to be tapering off a bit over the past week. So it did slow down a little bit from what we were seeing the end of June, first few days of July, but we do have sockeye are still looking just fine right now, and we do have quite a few more sockeye to look at. Okay, I'm gonna
skip ahead to the sonar passage estimate, and that's going to be page 11 of your packet. It's going to show sonar passage estimates for king salmon, chum salmon, sockeye salmon. These are estimates through the 10th of July. And just looking at king salmon, through the 10th, the sonar counted about 122,000 kings. And to compare that to last year, through that date, they counted just under 86,000 fish. So we're doing better than last year at the sonar. And so really, sonar is indicating that, you know, the run is better than last year and within our preseason forecast range, likely. And this is actually just about the same passage we had at this point in 2018. And in 2018, we had a total run of about 136,000 fish. Now, let's look at chum salmon in the middle there. Through the 10th, sonar counted just 40,500 chum salmon, and that's quite a bit higher than where we were at this time last year, where they counted just under 10,000. So just like BTF was saying, the sonar is pointing to a better run than last year, and it's more likely a run similar to 2020, which, you know, which was below average, but at least it was better than last year. And for sockeye salmon on the bottom, through the 10th, there were about 513,500 sockeye counted, and that's just a little bit under than where we were at this time last year, where they counted 524,000 fish. So at this point, the sonar is putting us just behind last year at this time, which is also exactly what BCF was indicating. So everything's kind of in agreement there. And I wanted to finish up with just making a couple comments on our weir passage estimates. This week we included all the weir passage summaries. I believe those start on page 17. And I just wanted to highlight a couple things. So we recently met our king goals on the Queequeg and George River weirs. It looks like we're going to exceed our king goal, the upper end of our king goal on the George River weir this year for kings. Sockeye are starting off just fine at the weirs, and as expected, the chum salmon is starting off very slow. So I wouldn't expect high escapements this year for chum salmon. And the other thing that caught my eye when I was looking at weir passage estimates is, and we talked about this earlier in the call a little bit, I believe it was Dan Isai that brought it up, the king passage estimates at the Pit to Fork are pretty low right now. So hopefully they're building and they'll keep past soon, but right now they're pretty low there. So thanks, Manager.
Thank you, Sean. Are there any questions for Larson?
Madam Chair, if it's okay, this is Boyd, if I could ask the question.
Please do.
Hey, Sean, on, you know, my concern is just run timing for chum, and any indications that you have and on your crystal ball as far as, like, this, the timing of the chum run? I know you said stuff about the sockeye being potentially a little bit late, but on chum, would you expect that we're going to have kind of a quote-unquote normal year for run passage, run timing, getting past Bethel?
Yeah, boy, through the chair. You know, run timing is so difficult. Well, it's basically impossible to predict, especially when you have so much more of the run to see. So I would hate to say one way or the other whether it's going to be normal or late. The one thing I can say with certainty is that over the past several years, chum have tended to be a little bit later than average. Whether we see that this year, I hope we see that this year, but yeah. I don't really know.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Sean.
Are there any other questions for Sean? Hearing none. Next on the agenda, we've got a subsistence division project update. I didn't hear anybody on the line from Division of Subsistence, so perhaps we can go on to Native Village of Napaimute. Dan Gilliken, are you on the line?
I am, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. I don't have a whole lot to pass on. You guys have seen the numbers in the test fishery. We're a little bit better than the lowest number, but kind of on the lower end here. We did conclude the test fishery last night, basically not catching any more Chinook salmon and just a few chum. And I'm getting a little bit thin on crews, so we won't be putting out any more reports on that. The Salmon River Weir operations going along just fine. They are passing fish up there, including some chum salmon. And other than that, we're just getting ready this week for our George River internship, and we'll be out of touch for about a week doing that. If any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Madam Chair, this is Boyd again.
Go ahead, Boyd.
Hey, I know it's not like your responsibility to report on this, Dan, but since I know you live kind of close by, are you still seeing a lot of interest in fishing at the Aniak Box, rod and reel, or has that died off?
Through the chair, thank you, Boyd. I was going to mention that. Yeah, things have slowed down a little bit in the box. The king's pretty much peaked around the 4th of July and the 2 days after that. And that's probably the highest use we saw, maybe a dozen folks, you know, families down on the beach fishing, and then it started tapering off after that. We haven't been seeing more than a handful, maybe half a dozen people throughout the day down there rod and reeling. They're all, you know, have to work for it a little bit, but they are catching some fish. I think we're real safe with our initial estimate of 300 or fewer Chinook harvested. I suspect it's probably far less than that, but folks are still trying as a few kings trickle in, but pressure's been pretty light. Most folks have met their needs up here, so people are just going down to try to get a fish for dinner or something to put in the freezer.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions for Dan Gilliken from Native Village of Napaimute? All right, we sure appreciate all the work you're doing in Aniak, Dan, you and your crew. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have Working Group, KRITFC Representative Report. I believe that's Lamont Albertson.
That's correct, Madam Chair. I don't have anything to report other than what you have basically heard about the fish anyhow from the various members throughout the Salmon Management Working Group. But I would like to mention that we are seeing increased sales of dog salmon, we call them, chum salmon, but the outside interests are now calling them Keta salmon, spelled K-E-T-A, and I believe they got that from the Latin name of the chum salmon. But they are mixed with pinks, I notice, and they are sold as salmon burger patties at Costco. And I'm assuming it's that way throughout the United States, but I'm not sure about that. But I just want us to be aware that as a part of this management working group that they are selling our dogs, our chum salmon in lower 48. They are a commercially viable fish. And I think we should be aware of that. We should make everybody aware of that. And again, they're commercially viable, and so that means there's competition for them. And they are added with the pinks, and that's what makes up the salmon burgers throughout the lower 48. And I say they are added with the pinks, and I was reading the nomenclature on outside of the salmon burgers at Costco the last time I was there. And that means that there can be 100 chums and just one pink. And that we don't know what percentage is added there because it doesn't tell us on the labeling of the packets. But again, K Makita salmon are being sold in the lower 48, and that is our chum and our dog salmon up here. And I think we should all be aware of that. We should all be aware. I think we'll talk more about this when we talk about the Area M fishery down the intercept fishery for the Kuskokwim River. Switching gears a little bit, I thank the people in the lower, in the part of the Kuskokwim River where our monitors are working. They are getting numbers for us for the Intertribal Fish Commission so we can share them with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we do share those numbers. And we do predict, have our openings and predict what our openings can be based on the information that the community-based harvesters are getting. We thank all of those communities and those community leaders who have cooperated with us and cooperated with the Intertribal Fish Commission. And we look forward to the time when we will be gathering all of the statistical information for our fish here on the Kuskokwim River. And in time, of course, all of our game here on the Kuskokwim Valley. Again, we want to thank our monitors for going around to the boats and for asking the many questions that we expect that they will answer when we're getting that information. And again, we want to thank you for allowing us to participate in this salmon management working group. And if there are any questions, I will be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Lamont. Those are really good points, all of them. And I want to echo your gratitude to our monitors. These young folks are really impressive, and they're a real important piece of the management tool of community-based harvest monitoring. And we really appreciate the work that they do. Are there any questions of Lamont Albertson of either the community-based harvest monitoring project or his points on the intercept of chum? All right, hearing none, thank you, Lamont. I understand we are going to forego the commercial catch report. There hasn't been any. The processor report, we just have a processor on the Kuskokwim. That brings us to Sportfish report. John Tyflook or anyone from Sportfish? Nick, how on that?
It doesn't sound like anybody from Sportfish is on the phone currently. I mean,
okay.
I don't have a Sportfish.
Okay, is there sport fishing happening?
On the Kuskokwim River, I know chum and Chinook salmon is closed to sport fishing. Lamont would probably be the better person to talk to. I'd imagine people are out rainbow and pike fishing.
Lamont?
Through the chair, Mary, I think the Aniak River, we have a guide working full-time up there. I think he has several boats, and we're very concerned about that at the Intertribal Fish Commission. We're concerned about the enforcement up there, and we're concerned about just about the whole Aniak Valley and the result of the influence that the guiding activity are having on our resources up there. And that's all I have to report, ma'am.
Okay, understood. Moving on to intercept fishery report, I heard a very good news story done by Anna Rose Arthur, I believe, and her name is escaping me at this moment, but done by KYUK.
Olivia.
Olivia Evert, yes. A real good three-part story coming up. Don Larson, do you have any information on the intercept fishery in Area M?
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Sean. I do not, but so Nick can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at the end of our working group packet, there is a summary of Yes, there is. On page 31, it says Alaska Peninsula in season commercial harvest estimate. That's the area and update. So that's I don't have anything else besides that. Thank you.
Okay, and I have word from Robin Samuelson, who is a resident of Dillingham and served on the Board of Fish for a number of years, and he shared numbers. I think upwards of 1 million chums were caught in the June fishery at Area M. It is understood that most of the fish passing through that area are bound for the AYK region, and we continue to express concerns over this intercept fishery. Commercial use is once again being proven to supersede subsistence harvest needs and escapement needs. So that is a continuing concern. If no one has anything else on that, we'll move on to the weather forecast.
If I may, Mary.
Go ahead, Lamar. And then John Andrew.
The final page on our packet is a map that Savannah's gotten us from Appendix B2. It's a map of the, you can read it as well as I can, but I think that is the area M that they are talking about, that we are talking about right now. But anyhow, I think we should be familiar with this map, and I don't think we should know where most of the fishing is taking place. And again, I know year after year we hear all sorts of excuses about the fineness or the definiteness of the intercept of the chums, and they're trying to find the location where they come from genetically. And I know right now we don't have the tools that we should have in terms of identifying where they come from, but we know a lot of those fish are coming from the Kuskokwim River. And we know they are intercepted down there. We also know that they are mixed with pink salmon and sold as salmon burgers elsewhere in the lower 48. But our dependence on the salmon up here on the Kuskokwim River is entirely different than dependence of the lower 48. I would just ask us one question of the North Pacific Marine Committee, and I hope I will get to ask this question. But does it affect the way that the people in the lower 48 eat when they eat supper at night if they don't have their kita or chum or dog salmon? It doesn't affect the way they eat. They eat just like they normally eat. But does it affect the subsistence fishermen on the Kuskokwim River? Yes, it does. It does affect us. It does determine how much we have to eat at supper time, and affects what we have to eat at supper time also. So I would hope that we can deal with this Area M fishery and the intercept fishery and the questions about the genetic surveys, et cetera, and start to let these fish go through which are coming to the Kuskokwim River, not just the Kuskokwim, but the Yukon also, and the Nooshinggak and the other rivers in this area here. And I could go on and on about this Area M intercept fishery, but it's not good for the Kuskokwim Valley. It's not good for our fishermen up here. It's not good for our students. It's not good for anything that has to do with the Kuskokwim River. And we hope that somebody will hear us at some point. And, Mary, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, this is James.
Okay, James, 1 minute. Was that you earlier, or was that John Andrew a minute ago?
Probably John.
Okay, if it's okay with you, John Andrew will go first, and then you'll be after him.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This is John Andrew from Facebook. On tradition and knowledge, all we have in my family is my starting from my dad's and my grandfather and great-grandfather's time. He's at the before there was Area M fishing. Fishery used to be heard up in this area. They used to have tremendous runs of Chinook and chums. They used to come by the 100,000s, even by the millions some years.
And the starting rivers, our elders used to tell us that even as a young boy, I used to see a lot of standout Chinook and chums along the river. And when I traveled down between Haka and the rivers, they said there were so many dead fish on the beaches that it stunned up the whole air in their rivers. Now we don't see that anymore. So. Back in the 1980s, when Lumpisti used to be in existence, which was an environmental natural resource arm of AACP, the late Carol Sparks and another guy in there, used to try to bring this alarm up when they first started hearing about these fisheries down the area and false paths, Sullivan Islands, recently start picking up our chums by the hundreds of thousands, even by the millions. Then we got to the point where we have people seeing them all along the western coast of Alaska and other rivers. And they're doing the same thing on wrecks right now. Some years down the line, it's the same thing happening all over again. Our rivers would be like other rivers, like the Yukon side, they won't allow us to fish anymore. But they always ask us to bear the burden of conservation. That's where they hurt us the most. When you come back to the River of Orchards, we're not allowed to harvest to the pollution. So we have enough to get by. And that's something that's been bothering me all these years, because back in the 80s, we didn't know how to fight area and or have people that have the knowledge to go petition or their testimonies for their voice. And still, they meet in places where we cannot get access to them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, John. James Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the beginning of our season meetings, I made a statement that observing the waterfalls coming in late, that our salmon are going to be late. The Chinooks were late. They're still running. And the chums came in late. Their numbers are still going up out there. And they are observing the waterfowls coming in late. Fish were coming in late. And about Area M, what I used to hear from the elders was that is the only route the western salmon uses coming in through the Aleutians, besides the Simigan Pass, which has very low numbers coming in. I don't know how those old people knew about it. Even they didn't travel, but they used to call that in our language, Akulawak. That's what they used to call it. And to my understanding, all these commercial fishers that happened in Alaska, and this got to be looked at very close. All the commercial activities that are going on, all of them have a tributaries where the salmon trout up by the river, and it checked the escapements and then opened the commercial fisheries. And the state's got to look at this very close. Area M does not have a river that they can observe that there are enough fish packing into their spawning grounds. They don't have one. And why does Area M have a commercial fishing when they don't have such thing as other commercial fisheries do? That's one thing that the state lacks, that observing and taking care of Area M fisheries. Like I said, that is the only route that the salmon uses in the spring when they pass through to western Alaska. That includes Bristol Bay, Kuskokwim and Yukon and Norton Sound and the rest of the western parts of Alaska that comes in. And the statement that the elders talked about when we started conserving is are we conserving so that Area M would get more fish and we still are conserving salmon? That was a question that the elders used to ask before they passed on. And that is what we have to look at. Are we conserving salmon so that they can catch more salmon in Area M? Those are the statements that I've been pondering about. So we have to observe those and talk about those. And I belong to the YKHC Health Board, and I attend meetings in Portland. One of the researchers say that most of the vitamin D that we get are from the fish, and losing the fish in our diet, we are losing our vitamin D, which is more, which is important to the native people. That not only the native people, but the people that depend on the wild salmon, we are losing our vitamin D sources. In that case, thank you.
Thank you, James. I really appreciate all those points. And I think it's also worth noting that Western scientists are saying that on our river, the for every spawning, when we were all growing up, those of us in our 40s and 50s, for every spawning salmon, for one spawning salmon, six would return. And they call that the spawner recruit ratio. So it used to be one spawner, six recruits would come back and spawn. Now, apparently, it's for every spawner, less than one fish returns. And this is certainly true with the chum salmon. I'm sure the number is much worse than that. I think that number holds true for Chinook salmon. But there certainly seems to be a conservation concern, and it is a curiosity that no conservation measures seem to be taking place in Area M for those commercial fishermen. And perhaps I'm wrong. Chuck Brazil or John Linderman, I'm not sure if you want to speak to the issues that have been raised here today.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is John Linderman. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead, John.
So I don't claim to be an expert or have a lot of detailed knowledge about the peninsula fisheries of the Area M location that's being talked about, but I do know that this year there was voluntary actions taken by the fishermen to reduce their fishing time compared to what was allowed for them to have opportunity to fish under the current management plan down there. Additionally, the Board of Fish did take action this past spring to put a restriction in place or close down certain openers with the effect of it addressing concerns for Chinook sockeye salmon, and those same closures would also have the effect of reducing chum salmon harvest from that reduced fishing time from those efforts. So that has been information that's been reported on, say, the Yukon teleconferences, the weekly teleconferences in that regard. And, of course, in the packet there is the updated information of the harvest amounts from the peninsula fisheries this season as well.
All right. Perhaps next week the department could have available more detailed summary of those numbers. From what Robin Samuelson said, there were upwards of 1 million caught out there that in June, again, destined for AYK. So, and I know there's been resistance to engaging in this kind of conversation because, like you say, you're not intimately involved in peninsula fisheries and things are kind of chopped up by regions, and there doesn't seem to be much communication between the regions. So I know the working group would really like to be involved in those conversations or have a better understanding of the harvest levels down at Area M. And any information you could would be very appreciated.
Yeah, certainly I can look into that and talk to some folks at our headquarters about trying to provide some more information. I would say that to my knowledge, and perhaps either Nick or Sean can speak to this, but that the harvest information is what's reported by the department and what's produced there in the packet in that regard. So that's the source. It comes from the source of the harvest information.
Sure.
Madam Chair, this is Nick.
Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the report that you're hearing on the million fish, that's from last year. Like John said, on page 31 of the packet, that harvest information is current as of July 10th of this year. And on the very bottom of that table, there's the June Shumigin and June South Uminak harvest, which is looking at about 500,000 chum being harvested in 2022. If you could also pass along, I'm curious where the 6-to-1 spawner recruit information is coming from. So if you could pass along the information, because where you got it, I'd like to see it.
Sure. Happy to do that. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I can sure work on tracking that down.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, that was for Chinook and not chum.
Madam Chair?
Okay. Go ahead.
Hey. Oh, thanks, Avery. This is Boyd with the Yukon Delta, and I'm glad you mentioned the KYUK story. I know it's a three-part story, and there's more coming on it, and I thought it was really good, the parts that I've heard so far. But as a refuge manager, I'm here to hopefully speak for those that can't speak, and that is... the ecosystem and the wildlife on the refuge, it's clear that there's a concern for subsistence users. We have that too at Fish and Wildlife Service, but we have a great concern for these marine-derived nutrients that are coming into the river and have for eons, and we just have not seen it over the past 3 years. And we've floated rivers recently, as recent as last year before, and we've noticed that you just don't see the biomass on the sides of, as I think John Andrew mentioned so well, on the sides of gravel bars and sandbars. So what I'm concerned for not only are the subsistence users, which is completely valid, but the species out there, grizzly bears, black bears, just virtually every aquatic species that's affected by the lack of these nutrients that are coming back. And I would just not be doing my job if I didn't mention that, because it's getting to a point where I think it's a potential disaster upriver in some of these tributaries where those nutrients are no longer coming back. And we are really concerned with that at the refuge, because it's a big part of what we manage for. Is it's essentially a keystone species, if you're aware of what those are. They, I think a lot of the species on the refuge depend on all these nutrients coming back. So I know that that's not getting out in some of the articles and some of the posts. It's been an issue over different user groups getting the fish, but I think that's one important thing to remember, is that wildlife depends on it too. So that's all. Thanks.
Yeah, point well taken, Boyd. I understand that everything depends on salmon for those marine-derived nutrients, including trees and plants and songbirds. And without those nutrients making it back to our headwaters, many people, I think me included, are worried about an ecosystem collapse. It seems to be happening before our very eyes. Are there any other comments on this discussion item, intercept fisheries?
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Albert.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map here, and all these dark spots are fishing areas for Area M. And there's some that's come close to Bristol Bay, the Crystal Quim Bay, Northern Sound up north on Cotterview. I was at workshop in Cotterview for a couple of weeks, and they were telling us that very few catch kings, but mostly they catch chums. And the way I see it is, if there's no chums up north around Cotterview, how are they going to get their nutrients up there too? Because the chums go from to Aleutian Islands Area M all the way up to Cotterview, and they need that fish just like we all do on the Chris Cumbersville Bay and up that area, up Nome. And that's our food there. To Area M, they should close some of the fishing pairs, just like it says here on this map. It's all the dark spots. That's a fishing area through that pass right there. I see it, and if they lessen the commercial pairs for that week, maybe we'd be increasing our chums and our kings. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Albert. Are there any other comments on intercept fishery? All right, hearing none. The next item is a weather forecast. I think we all have pretty high-tech smartphones that can help us out with our weather forecast at our various points on the river. The next item is discussion of Alaska Department of Fish and Game management considerations and discussion of possible alternatives with recommendations from the working group. Nick Smith.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate, I don't have any proposed management actions, so my management action would be to keep the status quo in Sections 4 and 5.
Okay. Any discussion on that from the working group? Hearing none, the next meeting is scheduled to take place a week from today, Wednesday at 10 a.m.
believe that's the 20th of June or July. Savannah, is that correct?
I'm sorry. Yes, that would be correct. It's the 20th.
Okay. Same call-in numbers, same location. July 20th, 10 a.m. is our next meeting. And do I hear a motion for adjournment?
Madam Chair, this is Nick. I had a comment, if I could, before we adjourn.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like every year we need to make this comment, but which is unfortunate. So after the Saturday drift net period, there was about a dozen chum salmon dumped in the Bethel test fish tote. I just want to remind people that that's not a place to dump fish. You know, we don't know what the status of any fish that are dumped in there, and we don't want people taking fish and getting sick from them or anything. So just spread the word that please don't dump your unwanted fish in the Bethel test fish tote. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Okay, that's disappointing. Any other comments for the good of the order?
Charlie,
go ahead. John Andrew or James Charles, would you please interpret? We may have lost folks.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what you stated was when they go down to the Kuskokwim to go fishing, they don't catch that much where they fish, but they're very thankful of when they open the whole Kuskokwim for fishery so they can go fishing anywhere to get more fish. And that was his statement.
Rihanna Chuckock. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I didn't skip anything. So thank you for interpreting that fully. Anyone else? Comment?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Walter, you know, one thing you guys always talk about the ecosystem up there, and, you know, we get a lot of guides that rap and stuff, and, you know, when they use the numbers, when they go bathroom, they put this powder substance in their, where they have human waste. You know, I think, you know, they shouldn't use that. I don't know what kind of powder substance they always use in there when they go number two or, you know, and leave it. You know, that could affect, it could drain down to the river and affect, you know, whatever we have naturally on the river. I was just wondering, why do they use that powder substance, you know, on the, you know, and we don't, we bury it and make sure it rots naturally, you know. We don't put no other things on it. That's my comment, and I was just wondering what kind of stuff it is that they use. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not sure anybody here would know what kind of substance that is or the chemical. Anyone at Fish and Game happen to know that, or Fish and Wildlife?
Hey, Madam Chair,
okay, I'm not hearing. go ahead.
I sure don't. The only thing I've heard of is sawdust or something that they might use, but they should be, I can check on this, they really should be pretty tightly regulated on what they're doing as guides, you know, as far as packing things out, you know, especially waste. But I think it's a fair point that not only guides, but all of us, you know, we should probably be careful about any litter or camps, and this is that time of year, so I think it's a fair point that we all should be watching out for what we leave behind at campsites. And I can check on the guide regulations. Most of them are regulated pretty well with their permits and what they're required to do and not do. Not all of them are permitted through the Fish and Wildlife Service. Some of them are, or most of them are permitted through the state, but they should have that spelled out. So I can check on that.
Thank you, Boyd. I really appreciate that. Thank you. And thanks for bringing that up, Walter. Anyone else? All right. Thank you, Fish and Game staff, for the forum. We really appreciate being able to communicate directly with you. And thanks, Chuck and John, for being on the phone, and Nick and Sean and your crew there in Bethel. I will entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, Avery moves to adjourn. Lamont seconds. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, all those opposed say aye. Hearing no opposition, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.